hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads. Where bandits are catacombs and giant doors. Protect the chest and store some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's horse. A grand theft of Elder Scrolls. Simon's quest with Toe and Earl. Rocket shoes to Everclue. Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash your crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. Head on over to Spotify and give us some spins. Head on over, mosey on over to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. Drop us a line, controlissuespod@gmail.com, and, you know, hit us up on Blue Sky, controlissuespod, AMC. How you living?
Living well, A-Dub. We got back to back. Got so many weeks back to back, I can't even keep count at this point. But yeah, doing
that
the
consistency.
Damn thing.
It's like our younger years all over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's been good, though. Just working out, same shit. Kids in school. Now, I think this is week two. We got back to school night coming up next week. So, yeah, we get to officially meet his teacher, which will be cool. And, yeah, that's about it, man. Just working out, enjoying this Labor Day weekend, hot-ass Labor Day weekend, trying to stay cool. God. Got my fan blasting right now. Didn't even bother closing the windows. So I just hope if it gets loud, I'll mute it, I guess. But yeah, it's bad. It's hot. It's scorching out here in LA, man. Not enjoying it, but get the AC going when I can and watching my anime, keeping up with My Hero, pushing through that. Just still holding it down, still handling business. AEW wrestling. There was an event last weekend, so it was the fallout to it this weekend. Only thing I'll say is it was pretty cool. They're doing a residency in Philadelphia, AEW, and it doesn't seem like it's a lot of people there, but it's just a raucous crowd, and you can just see whether it's if there's say there were thousands more people and they were a more subdued crowd versus a more intimate setting with a crowd that's more into it and lively. It just adds that much more to the product, and really enjoying this. They'll be in Philadelphia for a couple more weeks, so I'm hoping that this crowd can keep up the energy and the intensity and reactions to all the matches, because it was absolutely awesome last week. But that's all I gotta say, man. Not really much going on. How about yourself? How you been? How's your life been this week?
Well, I mean, also enduring this hot as balls end of August, beginning of September. Speaking of, I gotta pay the rent. Yeah, man, working out. You know, still taking my Fridays off, so just consistently having those 3-day weekends, using it to double up on the boxing. I put in my back to back days, Friday, Saturday, but we got the Monday off, so gonna get in another day, get another heavy chop on my fitness goals. I'm trying to be back in the small wardrobe by the birthday. Got like a little under 2 months, maybe 6 weeks, so I'm trying to make some meaningful progress in that home stretch, and looking forward to doing that. You know, also got the AC blasting to the point where like I don't even register it on like orally is the word. I don't register the sound of the AC anymore. So I'm just watching TV, no problem. Just got it blasting, having a good time. finally got these noodles shipped and I bought them on Amazon so I could try out this instant ramen carbonara recipe I found on YouTube watching Joshua Weissman. I love his channel, all his food and restaurant hacks. So yeah, I'm gonna probably do that. Had to settle for pancetta instead of guanciale. So, you know, Gotta get over that little pee in the stack of mattresses in order to achieve my comfort level. But yeah, man, just trying to keep everything under control. Hurt my shoulder a little bit, but still fighting through it. Got my flu shot. You know, the hair is back to the desired length. Starting to catch some looks out in public as the poundage comes down, as the look tightens up. I'm seeing it. It's turning around. All the signs are there. So who knows what stories I may or may not have in the coming weeks. But I'm just being optimistic. Just being optimistic, enjoying where I am. Anime kicking ass. I mean, I can't. I'm just gonna name all the same stuff. Kaiju number 8, Rising of the Shield Hero, To Be Hero X, Togen Aki, Anki, that other one in the junk world. Man, I gotta remember what that one's called. Well, I'll talk about it next week. But yeah, other than that, you know, got my plants repotted, trying to throw some more business to the local nursery. Gonna probably walk over there, buy some plant food, walk back, and, you know, get a little cardio in for the day, get some food for the plants. What else? I think that just about covers it, man. I'm just looking forward to this 4-day weekend, which is gonna end up being a 3-day work week next week, leading into another 3-day weekend. So, you know, I'm just enjoying taking so much of my life back. Just in the decade plus that I've been working in, like, the corporate world, or just, you know, the adult business world, not adult entertainment, but just, you know, used to have, you have part-time jobs, you have little like jobs here and there. But, you know, for this past, like, where did I start? Yeah, it's almost 15 years. I've just been working steady in the accounting finance side. So, you know, it's, in all that time, I never really took advantage of my PTO and all that stuff in order to, you know, have a better work-life balance. So it's, I'm still feeling the effects greatly. I'm still enjoying it. I'm not looking forward to when I gotta let my PTO accrue anymore. But yeah, man, that's about it for me.
Well, how about that game in life, A-Dub? How's that been for you?
That game in life stays spicy, man. I mean, there's the big one, where we get all the homies involved. But just on a personal level, somehow I don't know, Wuchang Fallen Feathers got me with that Souls like itch. Like, I found the fluidity and the movement within the genre that I prefer. So I've been looking for more games similar to Wuchang, and sure enough, somebody recommended Lords of the Fallen after the major update that it had. And wouldn't you know it, somehow I just got focused on this game. It took me away from Death Stranding 2, and I think I'm approaching the end, and I'll only be playing it for about a week. It's awesome, man. Like, it's tough where it needs to be tough, but it also functions in a way where, like, okay, this is a particularly hard challenge. Maybe if I go level up a bit, maybe if I find a weapon, maybe if I upgrade some stuff, maybe if I, you know, get an extra flash charge, or use a different item, or use a different armor set, like, whatever solution you can come up with, it's going to have some meaningful effect in how the combat goes. And, like, sometimes you could run in there with your favorite stuff on, using your preferred weapon, but then other times you got to switch things up just a little bit, and it tends to work out. Like, I haven't had to repeat any boss encounters too many times. Most times I'm taking them out in the first encounter. It has a summoning mechanic where you can get the NPC allies in some of the boss fights, some of the bigger boss fights actually, and I'm using that every single time because I have nothing to prove to anybody. And I'm not trying to spend my time making things more difficult than they need to be. So yeah, summoning my AI companions, you know, pincer attacking the boss, making sure I'm hitting them in the back all the time while the NPC allies absorbing all the damage up front, whipping that ass. I mean, just loving the visuals, loving the performance, the opening of the two worlds and the ways in which you can transition between them, the differences, the new pathways and secrets that open up. It's such an original and just interesting idea. I know that Bloober Team did a game. What was that called? It started with like an E. and it's going to bother me. I'm so sorry if I'm breaking
Oh,
protocol here.
good.
The
I'll edit.
medium.
Yeah.
The game was the medium where it was like two worlds overlaid over one another and you transit between them. So that game came out 2021, so around the same time that the Lords of the Fallen reboot came out. So it's really got me excited for Lords of the Fallen 2. The main drive of Lords of the Fallen is that you have to cleanse these five beacons and then take on the boss and everything's good. So I've just cleansed the fifth beacon, and there's a region that I used to have access to that I don't have access to now, and I'm trying to figure out how to get around that, and at the same time I'm trying to figure out where the final boss is. And yeah, man, overall it's been a highly enjoyable experience. It's definitely up there in the same group as a Wuchong. I'm have my sights set on Neo. I think I'm gonna just pull the trigger and get the remaster so that I can enjoy it in better quality and better performance. And hopefully it lets me import my PS4 save, because that would be awesome. I remember enjoying Neo, especially as I started to crack the what I could do and what was necessary to overcome the challenges. So I'm looking forward to going back to that, especially since it has like a more Diablo style tiered loot system. I love loot in general. I wish all games have loot, but Neo has the kind of loot where it's just like dropping random. It's dropping at different quality levels with different stats and different fixes and things. So that I'm looking forward to just eventually just getting all that good stuff, getting that build going, and like figuring out what my avenue of defeating that game is gonna be. But other than that, I think we're gonna talk about another game at the same time. So I'd feel better if you got to it, because AMC, I'm trying to figure out what you've been playing.
Yeah, so the game that we both been playing, we talked about it last week. This is the only game I played this entire week, so I figured we would just have there were surprises, 'cause I was expecting, all right, get Wu Yang, this shit's going to be amazing, new season of Overwatch, hell yeah, enjoy that. And then they ended up just dropping all these changes, and all these changes that I feel like are going to just add so much more to the game as it is, just to feel more reward, and then also just certain things like from a stat perspective that add a little bit more to your connection to different characters within the game. So I'm just gonna run through these patch notes real quick from IGN, and then we could talk about our experience with the first week of season 18 Overwatch. So yes, let's see. So
Oh,
I pulled
so
this from IGN.
good.
IGN did like a breakdown. I could have pulled right from Blizzard, but it was too extensive, and I needed the truncated version. So first off, IGN lets you know Wu Yang, which I just mentioned, he's in the game. We love the waterbender. He's kicking ass. More on that later. We got two mythics, one of A-Dub's main characters, that being Sojourn with the
Finally,
ultra,
finally.
yeah, with the ultraviolet sentinel mythic. And then we Cassidy, he got a weapon mythic, being the Blazing Sunsetter. It looks pretty dope, actually. There's also hero ratings, which I'm excited about. So hero skill
Yes.
rating measures your performance with each hero in competitive. Detached from your overall rank, each hero can earn their own skill rating from 0 to 5,000, complete with visual tiers and feedback following every match. So you'll now know that people will know that not only are you good, but you're one of the best. I don't know, Lucio's one of the best. Sojourn's one of those Junkerqueens. Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm liking that. We got hero
I didn't
progression.
even know about that, so I'm definitely gonna fire up the game and take a look and see where I've already scored, because I don't know. I feel good when I'm out there playing Sojourn, but I'd like to have a numerical reinforcement. Be like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Yeah. Actually, I gotta complete all my placement matches before I'll see it, I'm assuming. Let's see. Hero Progression 2.0. Hero Progression 2.0 changes the leveling system with faster progress, a permanent prestige feature to show off your accomplishments, and an overall cleaner UI. The new system rewards you with animated portrait borders at levels 20, 40, and 60, and they'll automatically be equipped. When these borders are earned, they'll be permanently attached to your account across seasons. You'll also earn loot boxes as you progress. So this is the huge one. You'll also earn loot boxes as you progress with the following milestone rewards. Loot box at level 5, epic loot boxes at level 25, 35, 45, and legendary loot boxes at 30, 40, 50. And they do this retroactively, so people just hopped on, and yeah, we'll talk about that. Let's see. So we also got hero updates. They changed some of the major and minor perks, as well as some of the individual, some nerfs we saw to some characters and things like that. I'm not going to go through all of those because there's just so much. So we can talk about our individual characters if we want. There was also an advanced info panel, so we're getting into the stats, more to the stats. Let's see, a new advanced info panel is available to see detailed breakdowns of what heroes can do. These panels include precise damage and healing outputs, cooldown times, and much more. Blizzard have also confirmed that a hero's stats page is under construction, allow you to track hero win and pick rates to help maximize your potential to win. And then lastly, but not leastly, they also added mouse and keyboard support for consoles. The good thing here is when it comes to matchmaking pools, PC pool and console pool will now be referred to as mouse and keyboard pool and controller pool. This change will be updated in our in-game UI and in a future update. So, hey, Dub, now that we went through all that, let's talk about it. How was your first week of Season 18, seeing those changes, seeing those loot boxes? What was it like when you fired it up on Tuesday?
Well, yes, that's exactly the moment I want to discuss, is the initial opening. Of course, you're greeted with a mandatory subtitle trailer. I think they need to do something about that. I don't like subtitles. But yeah, greeted with the trailer, greeted with all the things, greeted with the trailer, greeted with all the screens detail, you know, giving you the general overview of what's new and what's going on. And then I land on the main page, AMC, and what do I see but the loot box icon with the number 34 next to it. I was like, oh shit, I got 34 loot boxes. That's pretty crazy. I go look in the loot boxes. It's like 11 regular ones, such and such epics, and then a bunch of legendaries. I'm like, oh, they spread this out. And like, that's kind of how I noticed the changes, because then I went in the progression screen. You see all the rows with all the different rewards. You see your characters, and they're ordered from like your highest to the lowest. You got your borders. Then I start playing AMC. Then you get on the screen, you select your characters. Now they got cards that not only show you the character that somebody selected, but it shows you the level of progression they have with it, as well as their next three progression, their top three characters in terms of progression. So you can start to get an idea of like, oh, wait a minute, he's got this character, like he's got a level 100 tank, but he's playing with a level 15 DPS right now. Is he a tank guy? Is he becoming a DPS guy? What's going on? Or you can see people like, oh, you're bringing your main out from the get-go. Let's do this. So no, it has an extra layer of strategy, an extra layer of information. You pointed out to me that they added the advanced stats, and I think that's cool for people who want to get into the min-maxing and the minutia of, you know, doing the most damage or doing things at the right time or comboing things up. I mean, overall, I've been thoroughly impressed. Like, the progression system was whatever before the patch, but now it has so much more reward that can be unlocked through it, and retroactive. Like, that's an excellent gesture of goodwill to the community. So, you know, I appreciate that. I appreciate the changes. Your man Wu Yang is killing it. People are quickly acclimating to his kit, and the skill level of Wu Yang players is getting up there. Like, I'm getting hit with those water orbs from around corners and all kinds of stuff. So I was like, okay, I see what's going on. Like, he is just blowing up tanks. Wu Yang is extremely powerful. So, you know, AMC already harnessing that. Each single giving it a shot, but he's more of a DPS man. So I don't know. Overall, I'm having a blast. AMC, how about yourself? How was How was it when you booted things up on Tuesday and were greeted with all the gifts for all your hard work and dedication?
Yeah, I loved it because there's a couple of things there where I was like, it was one great to before I booted up to go on Reddit and then just see all the reactions like, holy crap, what is going on with all these loot boxes all of a sudden?
Yep.
Motherfuckers suddenly enjoying gambling on skins.
Oh, yeah.
When it's free, it's not gambling, I guess. Yeah, so yeah, that was awesome. Just that added element because there's people want like people enjoy reward for playing games, and they brought back the loot boxes to A Dubs and A Dub and my like is our happiness. We applauded it. It was cool at the rate that we were getting them, but we weren't getting a ton of loot boxes, but it was great that we were getting something. And then out of nowhere to then be like, oh, and we're gonna now give you more based on one, your hero progression, but two is just like you'll just see there's like do this challenge, you get 11 loot boxes like that.
They got the Luka Cobra challenge right now.
Yeah, and then they on top of that they also added in was it the Cowboy Bebop a chance to earn was the Ein skin the little the rat dude, and so yeah, so that was dope. So just seeing all of that when I hopped on and seeing all those loot boxes and seeing the reaction, there was automatically like oh this is like I felt like season 18 was gonna get big, especially when a couple of days leading up to it, you sent in the text thread the oh like they're doing all these changes to the minor and major perks for certain characters, and like you saw every character was getting at least one change, so it was like oh damn this is gonna mess with some kids, this is gonna maybe change some for the good or bad, let's see what happens. And then so that was like already starting to build the anticipation, and then when we saw the loot boxes on top of that, then I was like, what? And then I go in and I see the advanced stats as I'm like, because I always love to look at the hero details before mass just to like refresh myself on like the major and minor perks if I'm trying to add a new character. And then I just see like this option for advanced stats and I'm like, oh, let me click this. And all of a sudden I'm seeing like, oh, cooldown time on this, high damage on this, critical damage on this. And it's like, what? All these stats? Okay, got seeing the numbers a little bit more. So that's dope to make that available as opposed to needing to go online to check all that stuff out. And then yeah, and then so I play Wu Yang, gave that a shot. First match, I had no idea what was going on. Like I was sending out the orbs and I was not hitting anything. And if I didn't try it, it wasn't going far enough. And so then I learned that you have to charge it, and that's how you get explosive damage with the orb, but also it increases its velocity and sends it further as long as you're holding down the button on the charge. And then once I got that, then I had to figure out like, okay, I gotta like either lead the mouse or keep the mouse on, or not the mouse, but
The
the
mouse.
trigger, yeah, the reticle on the character, and then it will follow them. It was a little tougher to hit moving enemies, so then I took it to the practice range, played some of that, and then I got it down, and then I was going into matches and just picking off support. Like the best way I almost feel like is if you're kind of off in the cut and as the battle starts going, then you just step in and start sitting at orbit and picking off people because they don't see it coming. And by the time they're taking damage from it, they're already down like half of their health to like three quarters of their health from like two shots. And so yeah, it just immediately is super effective from a damage standpoint. Then I'm like it took me a second too to figure out the healing because there is a manual healing where if you hold it down, kind of like I don't know any of the characters, if you hold it down, it'll start just it'll create a connection, like a water connection with the character, and you start just giving them a burst of healing. So I kept doing that, and I was like, man, I'm getting a lot of healing, but it is like it's a lot of focus doing that. And then as I played it, I clicked it one time on accident without like holding it down, and then it went to the water vapor, like went to the ally and was just stayed on them. And I was like, oh
What?
shit, this has like a kind of like a Zenyatta passive healing where if I just click it on the homie, it'll just passively heal them. It's not, I'm pretty sure it's not nearly as strong as Zenyatta's if you do it passively, but still they get that steady stream of healing when you're not paying attention. And then when you're ready to give them that boost, then you hold it down and it does the manual
Damn.
healing, which gives them a boost of healing. On top of that, then you have the tidal wave, which does damage to the enemies and heals your team. So that kind of lit like that kind of adds to the advantage of that strategy of kind of staying back. And then as the fight breaks out, you send that tidal wave, you send, you heal everybody in its path and hurt everybody in its path. So it's a pretty effective attack to just like kind of just quickly give a little bit of a boost and a little bit of a little bit damage to the other side. And to liken that, the ultimate was immediately awesome. I'm loving that knockdown. Like I'm throwing it on Mercies in the middle of the fight. And you'll see like it's the Mercy will have it. They have the defense up and dudes will be like, oh, let's take her down. And then it releases and it just knocks down everybody. And it's like, ah, nah, motherfuckers. And you start hitting them with the healing orb, taking them out. The Mercy gets out of the field. So it's really effective, especially on tanks that like love to charge in like a Malga or a Reinhardt. So really enjoying the full kit. It took a second to get used to it, but it's amazing. Like he is a great character. Everybody's loving it to the point where now I feel like there's been like a little bit of like, just for the sake of discussion, like people like pushing back on Wu Yang, but like, I think everybody's loving it right now. And yeah. And then like in the major minor perks, Lucio's, it's going to take a little bit because he had a minor perk that basically all you had to do was when you selected it, it just gave an automatic 15% increased knockback to the boop, which is awesome. Now what they did is in somewhat of a way they nerfed it in that it has, you have to wall ride. And I was doing the math because I was like, all right, how long does it take to build it up? You have to wall ride for about like 7 seconds. And then you do that and then it charges up the boop. But what's dope is that it gives, I think, 25% knockback and an added amount of damage on top of it. So it's it's pretty strong. It's just you have to build it up, which is kind of annoying, which I do a lot of wall riding. So it's something I think they just figure it's something that will just come naturally with the playstyle of Lucio. But I did like just having that thing just on the ready at all times, as opposed to like I used it, I got to make sure to do some wall riding to build it up and then get off another big attack. But and then it got me to also play a little bit more of Brigitte, which I've been loving. I played her in the past, kind of liked her, but never really fully connected. And then I was just looking at the perks, and she has a minor perk where if you do the whiplash, when she sends out the mace, like throws it in front of her. If you use that as your first attack, then you add an extra 3 seconds to your passive heal to all your teammates as you're doing melee damage. So that's dope. And then the major perk that they added in, if you lead off the off your attack with a shield bash, then all your heals, one, you get an added 30% movement speed, so you can close the gaps a lot quicker as you're running at enemies. But then two, the passive healing is instant instead of progressive or like over time. And so that's basically I'm just trading off between these two when it comes to like, oh, I'm about to get it going. If their enemy's far away, I'll do that whiplash and at the 3 seconds. If I got them in close, I do that shield bash and get the instant heal. And I immediately felt that like just make a full difference for like the encounters, the skirmishes. And yeah, I'm loving everything that they're doing. How'd you like that Sojourn skin when I saw you rocking it when we were playing with each other?
Yeah, it's growing on me. I'm not fond of the feet. Look real Mega Man-ish. But at the same token, it's like the rest of the skin is pretty dope. They give you enough options to craft whatever look that you're looking for. There are some effects and flourishes that I would like to have. However, I don't want to make my character too overly visible. At the same token, you also have the option to apply one of the aspects that you can get in the mythic shop, like the gold one, or what I'm rocking is the iridescent one. So it's just shining so good. Coupled with the gold gun, I'm just flashing. And like, insofar as Sojourn's perk changes, you know, before I was always using the one, it boosted the amount of charge you could accumulate during her ultimate so you could make more powerful rail cannon blasts. And then the other one was the orb would become a sticky. And so if it hit an enemy, then they can't get out the field. It's just sticking with them. So they're like running back to their support, but they're taking the orb with them. It was the best.
Yeah.
But now they still have the one for the overcharge on the ultimate, but what I'm using instead is they changed the orb to bring back its original effect when Sojourn was first introduced, which is that anyone who's in it, they have their movement speed reduced. So they're going to be in it longer and they're moving slower. So they're easier targets.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was getting stuck in those things, I was like, damn, like this is like it's a problem for some reason right now. That makes sense then. Okay.
This OG Sojourn, man. Oh man, I missed this functionality so much. And then the other ability she has now is her slide gives her 50 points of charge. So like if I ever need to just get that extra boost or like, just in the process of evading enemies, I still have a bit of juice that I can dish out and cause some damage, get a quick elimination on a straggler. Something like that, like just making her more deadly, slowing down enemies. So yeah, it's been awesome, but it's been my time playing Reaper that has really like sharpened my skill at being able to identify holes in the enemy team and be able to like just dive into that hole and cause some serious damage. So doing that with Sojourn, it's just I'm just carving a path. Cutting down people, getting the stragglers, like just leaving them no choice, just in that close quarters, high damage zone. So, it's been a blast, man. Overwatch continues to get better. I was loving the results I'm getting from these loot boxes because, the common ones, they say you get a guaranteed legendary every 20. The epic ones, you get a guaranteed legendary every 8. However, that doesn't mean that you won't hit a legendary in less than 20 or less than 8. Like there was one run when I was opening boxes where I think four of them, oh, excuse me, three out of four of them were legendary. Like it was legendary, legendary, regular one, legendary. I was like, yes, this is great. So man, I'm still looking to find that Reinhardt Space Marine skin and another benefit that we didn't discuss was within the retroactive rewards from the progression system, in addition to the boxes, was just a mother load of legacy coins. Like I logged on, I had like 17,000 legacy coins. So I'm going in the hero pages, I'm buying all the cheap stuff and just getting rid of everything that could be in a loot box so that I can increase the odds of getting something more valuable or more desirable. So, Overwatch is it took a long road to go from what it was to what it tried to be for a second, back to not only what it was, but just so many levels better. Like I can't say enough.
But
Can't.
without the 6-player teams, that part, like I'm still liking the changes that they brought with Overwatch 2.
Yes. Yeah, 5v5 is a big deal. I say it all the time. It made the individual skill of each player more prominent and impactful than it was at six. And even so, they still brought back six as a separate thing. So people who enjoy that can still dive in that way.
Finally.
Plus we got Stadium and everything that's going on with that. Like I haven't played it since they introduced it at least a couple seasons ago, but Stadium is awesome, man. And it just got some pretty big changes and improvements. So yeah, Blizzard, keep doing what you do. I'm gonna keep playing your games and I'm gonna keep having a blast.
Hell yeah. All right, well, let's take a break and we will come back with our next topic of the week.
Next topic of
Topic
the
of the
week.
week. All right, we are back. A-Dub, you got the next topic of the week.
Topic of
Of
the
the
week.
week.
I'll keep this one simple. I'm gonna hit you guys with the PlayStation Plus monthly games for September. Timber, timber.
Amber.
Shiver me timbers. Yes. The monthly games for September 2025, Psychonauts 2, Stardew Valley, and lastly, Viewfinder. A game that I've seen trailers for, but I don't quite remember what it was about. I think you just take pictures and like check off a checklist of like I took this picture kind of thing. But it's very like cute and cozy and games for impacty. AMC might know more since that's its category, but AMC, how are you feeling about this coming month's offering?
I am happy for the people who maybe had been on the sidelines, had been considering playing Stardew Valley, that now you have a very, they're giving you it, they're handing it to you on a silver platter, A-Dub.
Yes, they
and
are.
It's a game that I've been playing for, I don't even know how long, because we played it, Marissa and I. Here, mind, I haven't played it single player. I've been playing it with Marissa. Now I play it with Marissa and my kids. My kids play alone. It's oh. They all have. We have so many farms because Theo keeps making new farms, and Naomi always wants a new farms, new farm. They have a lot of different farm types, and then there's also the. I think they just want to create a new character. So they like. I want a new farm and I want a new character. But yeah, everybody's playing Stardew in his household. It's kind of the game that has brought us all together from a video game standpoint. So yeah, it means so much to me, and I would definitely, like, a lot of people play it solo, but it's definitely a game that I highly recommend for multiplayer. One, you can just do so much more, and there's a lot of collaborating that happens, and it's fun to go into the mines and take out enemies and gather resources together, or you can just divide up the tasks. So there's a lot to do in the game, and even beyond the farm maintenance, like learning about the town, the secrets, finding items, and building relationships, which then leads to story events to learn more about the individual characters' personalities and backstories. But there's so much heart in this game and game within the game that it definitely, I could see it, like, just anybody who's had their hands on it, I could see them changing their idea of what these types of games are, because you hear about like Harvest Moon and whatnot, but this one is just, there's so much love and like just handcrafting from Concerned Ape and I guess his small team, that like you really feel like every decision, there's a lot of thought that goes into it, and it all makes sense, and it lends to the world by adding more lore, and that connects the player to just the whole setting. And I can't say enough about Stardew Valley. It's one of my all-time favorite games. So the fact that people will just be getting this with all the updates, because they don't do DLC, they just give you the updates, the new content. The 1.6 was the big update recently, and you'll just have all that right out the gate. So yeah, it's absolutely awesome. I hear good things about Psychonauts, and yeah, Viewfinder, I remember when it was initially debuted, that was definitely like a game sort of impact thing that, like, I was just like, oh, that's interesting. But mainly I would say Psychonauts 2 and Stardew Valley are the games to really keep your eye on here if you were looking for something to play and you have nothing to go with this month. So yeah, I think it's a very solid offering for September. Yeah, that killing it. Do you have anything else there, A-Dub?
Yeah, I'll definitely be adding Psychonauts 2 and Stardew Valley to my ever expanding library of ever increasingly greater and greater games. I don't know if that was a grammatically correct sentence, but it felt right. So I'm going with it. But AFC, you got our next topic of the week.
Topic of the week. Yes, we have Circana's best-selling games of for the month of July and for the year to date, and some, you know, some numbers as far as things, how things have been going. Now that the Switch 2 is out, we have a lot of that. We have a lot of information with that going on. So let me just jump right into the best-selling games of July in the United States. Make sure
here
you
we
know.
Go.
So number one, we got a new game. So these won't be surprises. We got EA killing it right out the gate. They show up with football, and football just hits the top. So we got number one, EA Sports College Football 2026 as the number one game.
Damn.
And it's debut month. Number two, we have EA Sports MVP Bundle 2025. Interesting why it's 2025, but I believe the MVP Bundle is it's a combination of I want to say what's it called, the college football game, and I want to say Madden, but I don't know. I'm not gonna say it. go too far.
That's
on
a
that
smart
one.
Idea if they haven't done that.
Yeah. Then we have number three, another new game, A-Dub, that being Donkey Kong Bonanza. Number four, another new game, a new old game, but another new game, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 and 4.
So yeah.
People showed up, they demanded it, and they showed up and they bought it. So that's
right.
Good for the Tony Hawk.
That's
Let's
what
see,
you do.
Number five, Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Numbers. So these are all Microsoft pretty much at this point. So in Tony Hawk, then we have number five, Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Number six, Minecraft. Number seven, Forza Horizon 5, and number 8, another new game. This also Microsoft, Grounded 2. So Microsoft cleaning up in that little bit of area. Then we have Red Dead Redemption 2 still selling a dub. So Take-Two showing up, Rockstar showing up. We got at number 9, Red Dead Redemption 2. At 10, Grand Theft Auto 5. All these games still selling. Then I'll just run through these next couple. We got MLB The Show 25. We got Death Stranding 2 on the beach at number 12.
Yes.
WWE 2K25, Elden Ring, NBA 2K25, Elden Ring, Night Rain. Damn, so Elden Ring outselling Night Rain now. Back up to outselling Night Rain.
There we go.
Then we got Split Fiction still holding it down. EA Sports, Marvel Spider-Man 2, and F1 25. And now for the best-selling games of the year so far. Number one, still holding on a dub, Monster Hunter Wilds.
Hell
Elder
yeah.
Scrolls 4 Oblivion Remastered still at number 2. Damn. Number three.
I've been getting the itch to go back to it too.
Oh, hell yeah. Jump into those gates.
Yeah,
Let's
apparently
see.
they fixed the performance. So yeah, it might be they fixed the performance and they also fixed the adept difficulty level. And I personally felt like it's way too big of a spike between journeyman and adept, and I guess they heard the message. So, they did what they needed to do to alleviate my qualms. So the least I can do is give them some more hours.
Let's see, number two. Oh, sorry, that was Elder Scrolls. Number three, new game. So in its debut month, EA Sports College Football 26 is already the third best-selling game of the year. Number four, Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Five, MLB The Show. Six, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. Seven, WWE 2K25. Elden Ring Night Rain at eight. Split Fiction at nine. Nice to see that still holding on. 10, NBA 2K25. And 11, Forza Horizon 5. Let's see, at 12, we have EA Sports MVP Bundle. So now you can kind of see the difference in the sales because EA Sports College Football 25 debuted at three for the year, and then we go all the way down to 12, and then we get to the bundle, which was the second best selling, I guess, content of the month of July. Then we got 13, Minecraft, Civ 7, Grand Theft Auto 5, PGA Tour 2K25, Doom the Dark Ages, EA Sports FC 25, Red Dead Redemption 2, and then at number 20 in his debut month, Donkey Kong Bonanza. So notable here is Death Stranding isn't in the top 20. It was a physical game, right? It wasn't just digital. Not that I don't know if that would keep it off of this
That's
list.
a good question. I don't think it was physical. Like I think the collector's edition came with a code, but I could be
Okay.
wrong. I could be wrong because I feel like I've seen people make like alternate PS5 covers for the sleeve.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I am curious because I know there's a lot of positive reaction to it. Who knows? Anyways, let's see. So hardware, let's see. And Nintendo Switch has now surpassed 2 million units sold in the U.S. life to date. It is currently 75% ahead of the unit sales pace set by the original Nintendo Switch. We got that momentum going. Hardware, Nintendo Switch 2 drove July's hardware spending growth. July dollar sales of PS5 hardware fell 47% compared to a year ago, while Xbox Series spending dropped by 69%. Nintendo Switch spending also declined by 52% year on year. So that's the Switch 1. Hardware, Nintendo Switch 2 was the best-selling video game hardware in units and dollar sales for July and year to date. PS5 ranks second above both in measure and time periods. A note here, I'm gonna now start working this in to see how subscriptions are doing with the content spending because it is somewhat notable. For July, video game content spending increased 4% when compared to a year ago. So content spending being video game purchases, the inc and DLC. The increase was driven by growth in mobile and non-subscription segments, which offset a 9% drop in spending on console. And then a note for subscription services, year-to-date spending on non-mobile subscription services is now 19% higher than a year ago at 3.6 billion. So more people getting into the subscription side of gaming, and we're seeing a little bit of a drop-off in content spending. Interesting. We shall see if that trend follows, but yeah, I want to keep an eye on that to see where the subscription side of the industry where it's pacing in comparison to actual purchases of sales. Yeah, normally I would pose a question to you, A-Dub, but I don't really have much here other than, yeah, not much here. I mean, I guess you could, do you have anything to say about Tony Hawk, people showing up and buying that, supporting that? If not, we can move on to the next topic.
It feels like only yesterday when people were demanding that Nintendo lower the price of the Switch 2 and proclaiming how they weren't going to pay for $80 games.
Yeah.
Just outpacing the Switch.
Donkey Kong is 70. Mario Kart was the only one that was 80, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, people paid for it too.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Not everybody. There were a lot of bundles sold. Mm-hmm. But there were also a lot of just individual games sold. So, you know, let's try to remain calm out there. just take it or leave it where we can, because, you know, things got to happen for better or worse. And we just got to roll with the punches or adapt. And, you know, games are just going to keep selling. The industry is just going to keep moving forward. It's just going to keep changing. You know, there's a lot of people like holding on to the remnants of what was. But I mean, if increasing subscription revenue isn't a sure sign of like the next few waves of change, then I don't know what is. So, you know, instead of holding on to what was, enjoy what you have now, because you probably won't have that in a few years either. So best time to be a gamer, best time to be gaming. Tons of great stuff, too much great stuff. Enjoy all this wonderfulness. That's all I can say about that.
Do you have your next topic set up, or do you want to break before we jump into that?
Do I have my next topic set up? Actually, I do have my next topic. Yes. Ready? See, it's got the next topic of the week. Topic of the week. Now, this would typically be more of a quick hit. But I don't know. I think there's something here. So Rebecca Valentine over at IGN saying Elden Ring Nightreign's rumored ultra hard difficulty mode confirmed for September. As announced in an official post, the new mode is called Deep of Night and is essentially a challenge mode of the base game, while previously Nightreign's ongoing challenging in-game content has been limited to more difficult bosses. Deep of Night will impact an entire run from start to finish. One, enemies will not just be stronger than normal across the board. You also won't get, see, enemies will be just stronger than normal across the board. Sorry, I misspoke there. You also won't get a heads up about which Night Lord you'll be fighting, nor will you know if you're getting a Shifting Earth event in advance. So you won't be able to prep a build for any specific type of run. However, to counterbalance this, players will be able to collect new types of weapons and relics with even more powerful effects, though they may also have some new drawbacks attached as well. As you play and win Deep of Night, you will descend to deeper depth levels, going at least as far as depth 5. Each new depth gets even more challenging. The losses will push you back up to easier depths. So I thought this was interesting because it calls back memories of the easy mode campaign that was going on for FromSoft games. And here we are at Elden Ring Nightreign, where I'm sure this is at least one, but this might be the second time that they've added just more difficult challenges and higher difficulty to the game. So it's like easy mode, as always in these kind of games, continues to be just the base difficulty. And if you just learn to play the game on the base difficulty, then you can ascend to the higher levels of challenge and punishment. So AMC, as a Souls guy, as a theologian, how do you feel about this?
I like it because, you know, there are two routes you can go, and I kind of don't mind either, but I feel like you can either do the broad thing and try to appease some other fans, or you can lean into your base. And that's why I think that when you're adding harder difficulties, that's what you're doing. And I totally get it. Like, my coworker, he plays Liza P, and I remember like one of the comments he made is like, oh man, I wish there was like an even harder difficulty, like how much he, like, I guess, replays the game and loves it. you think about that with like Elden Ring and some of the people who've just done like their naked playthroughs and shit like that, like games.
New game plus 10.
Yeah, exactly. And so with that, I think adding just more challenge, there are a lot of people who are coming there for the challenge. And so I think adding other ways to beef it up, and from that perspective, I think just re-engages them and keeps them playing the game, as opposed to like, now I'm just a god and I'm just here just handling business and it's not a challenge at all because I just know all the ins and outs of every animation and like what I need to create openings and to get my shots off. So yeah, I like this. How about yourself? Does this, I know you took down Millennia. Does this entice you to come back in?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I loved Elden Ring. I like FromSoft. I like, you know, Souls-like classics, you know how it goes. The original formula from the original creators. However, I'm in a space now where I'm having a lot more fun with the Souls clones. Like the ones made by other developers that really nail their feel and their fluidity are just much more appealing to me at this point in time. But you know, if I do get back into the FromSoft stable of IPs, I don't think I'll be going back to anything Elden Ring related anytime soon. You know, hopefully they have their new IP on the way, or maybe they have an expansion for Armored Core 6 so that I'll have even more incentive to go back to finish Armored Core 6 so that I can then play the DLC. But yeah, man. Probably it was a funny topic to me. It's like, hey, we made it harder.
They're not listening.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, AFC, you got our next topic of the week. Topic of the week.
You know, let's take a break, A-Dub. I got to get my notes together, and then we will come back with that next topic of the week. Topic of the week. All right, we are back, and I am up. So I have a story. I have a follow-up to Helldivers 2. You know, I got that Halo. Yes. Update, and so we got an update from the CEO at Helldivers 2. So this article from GameSpot was titled "Stop Shitting Your Pants: Helldivers 2 Boss Jokes as Game Passes 500,000 Concurrents." So let's see. Damn. Helldivers 2 has topped over 500,000 concurrent players, leading to Arrowhead Studio CEO Shams Jorjani to revisit a joke that turned into a meme. Video Game reports that Jorjani asked players on Discord to stop shitting your pants while sharing that 500,490 players were playing the third-person shooter. Earlier this year, Jorjani, I hope I'm saying his name right, told Helldivers 2 fans on Discord that they would shit their pants regarding future plans for the game. And so, yeah, we're seeing as the game has done well, he says, yeah, hey, please stop shitting your pants. So let's see. Meanwhile, the explosion in player counts for Helldivers 2, it's tied to the game finally coming to Xbox Series X and S this week. In fact, Helldivers 2 even has a Halo ODST crossover, though Halo's assault rifle can lead to some crashing issues. Yeah, yeah, yada. Yeah, you should not know. Yeah, and then it just talks about coincidentally, PlayStation and Xbox ended up trading exclusives on the same day, October 26th, where Helldivers 2 finally landed on Xbox and Gears of War Reloaded landed on PS5. So, A-Dub, what do you think about this success of Helldivers 2 going multi-platform? Is all this success devaluing your console? What do you think about? And then, you know, there's this kind of this notion that Xbox gamers don't buy games, but we're seeing this boost in player count as it goes over to the Xbox. So, you know, this is, I would assume, to be beneficial, but you know, there are the console exclusive people who don't like these things. But are we past those days, A-Dub? How do you feel about all this winning for Arrowhead Studios?
Well, I mean, this is awesome for Arrowhead. I wish them all the success and the highest player count for what they did with the Helldivers franchise. Helldivers 2 is outstanding, and I want it to be played by as many people as possible. You know, my personal measure of value for a console isn't a factor at all. So, you know, I never really been into that. It's all about, I want the games, if they're good, to be played, supported, followed up on, built upon, expanded, added to, like that kind of stuff. So this is awesome for Arrowhead. I got in there, I played a little bit. I got the war bond, I got the assault rifle because I'm a medium penetration addict. You know, odd choice of words there, but yeah, med pen, oh, all day long. I'm all about the medium. So yeah, man, it's just awesome. The guns look good. The assault rifle is incredibly deadly. I'm a little let down that it can't be modified, but I totally understand because it's from a different universe. You know, you can't just start slapping flashlights and drum mags on Halo weapons. But, you know, I wish I could. However, even with not being able to be modified, it still functions and handles extremely well. I prefer the reprimand, but yeah, that's pretty dope. I'm gonna be working on that. On that war bond, but the primary thing I did when I was playing Helldivers 2 for that day or two was I would just go on and I would use the social tools in order to find groups of low level players because more than likely they're Xbox people just, you know, trying to figure things out, trying to get going in their quest to spread democracy. And I would jump in those games, come in with all my stuff, my heavy machine gun, my jetpack. Just flying across the battlefield, just taking out all the big stuff and just helping them along. And then I would bounce immediately after the missions. But that felt good. And it seems like the Xbox community is very appreciative for players such as myself logging on and just helping them along and welcoming them to the community with open arms. You know, it's also nice to see people online speaking highly and talking nice about Helldivers, and because normally internet communities can just descend into toxicity almost immediately, you know, divided from within, arguing and infighting. And it's nice to see that the Helldivers community has so far, you know, gotten over that period of its growth and is now just more collaborative and helpful and cooperative. So yeah, man, I'm looking forward to my brother and his boy getting back so we could get the team going, hopefully get Minister Grimes in there so we can tear some stuff up. They've made significant changes. You know, there's bug missions underground now, and there's new bugs and bugs that burrow, and just, you know, they always add new things to make the enemies more deadly, more varied, more unpredictable. And just Helldivers, it's a phenomenal achievement. I'm glad people are responding to it well, insofar as Xbox players and their purchasing habits. I'm still kind of looking at that on a game-to-game basis because we have a number of examples of Xbox games coming to PlayStation, and you can see a pattern there, but we don't have the same amount of data or a similar amount of data when it comes to seeing PlayStation games go on to Xbox and, you know, how Game Pass or anything else might affect that or whether they'll resonate or not. Helldivers was a very big game, so I expected it to do well no matter where it is. And sure enough, it is. So, you know, we gotta wait and see what the next game is. Final Fantasy 16 didn't fare that well. So, you know, we gotta up, we gotta down. Not
But
willing to draw
wasn't
a
Final
conclusion yet.
Fantasy one of those games that like even Square was like, oh, we didn't like our sales on PlayStation.
Still move like 3 million, though.
Yeah, but they don't like any of their sales in general, wherever they are.
They haven't liked their sales since Tomb Raider Definitive Edition and like Hitman 2 or World of Assassins or whatever. They don't know the value and the reach of their IPs, but it's kind of weird. Whatever. But yeah, man, Helldivers 2 was awesome. AMC, I hope that you get a taste of it one of these days. And yeah, man, I'm glad that I could Sherpa some Xbox players to victory in the name of democracy.
Yeah, I'm just glad to see that it did so well. I know that there was kind of not necessarily a call to action, but there it was the idea of like, hey, if they're gonna release this game that we've all been asking for to come over here, then we gotta support it. And so, yeah, to see that, like, I think that's like you say 16, I think that's not the big one for Final Fantasy. I think it's when Remake comes over. We'll see how that does.
Yes.
because that's the one that they've really been asking for. 16 was the one where everybody's like, this isn't a real RPG. Like, so I'm not as surprised that people might have skipped that one as I skipped it, and then I played Remake as opposed to And so
it's a good game, but it's not a good Final Fantasy.
Yeah, like it's a good it's potentially Game of the Year, but it won't win RPG of the Year, like shit like that. But yeah, no, so yeah, I think seeing that the concurrent player count jumped this much, that there was a lot of excitement for this game coming to Xbox, and then that excitement was matched with player count and sales. That's a good sign, at least. We're already seeing that Forza Horizon 5 is still charting as one of the best-selling games of the year after it went to PlayStation. So as we discussed also within the Circana, that content spending is going down. So why would you want to keep games exclusive if you see that, like, overall sales are dropping? That then if you do have a hit, then you want to get as much out of that game as possible. And so, yeah, that's where you get your sales on your console, and then you give them that waiting period, and then you send it over to another console and you get more sales. And that helps support other games that don't sell as well. So yeah, I think that's one of those things that I think it's overall going to be healthy for the industry. Might not be great for debate and which console is the best as they start to blend a little bit more. But overall, we're looking at the health of the industry at the point, as opposed to talking points and bickering between consumers. So yeah, that's all I got there. A-Dub, do you have the next topic of the week?
Topic of the week? Yeah, I do. AMC, and this is an interesting one. So strap yourself in. Rebecca Valentine over at IGN is writing about PlayStation Boss, says company now does much more rigorous and more frequent testing after Concord's failure. So let's get into the subject here. It says in an interview with Financial Times, PlayStation CEO Herman Hull says the company is hoping to mitigate future big expensive risks with future games. I don't want teams to always play it safe, but I would like for us, when we fail, to fail early and cheaply. Well, you failed both of those with Concord. Continuing on, Concord was not a cheap failure, clearly. Analysts estimate Sony spent around $250 million on the game, only for it to sell so poorly that Sony shut it down 2 weeks after launch and shuttered its developer, Firewalk Studios, not long after. Another quote from Hull saying, we have since put in place much more rigorous and frequent testing in very many different ways. The advantage of every failure is that people now understand how necessary that oversight is. Financial Times spoke to multiple Sony studio heads who said that this oversight means more focus on group testing, more communication between internal Sony studios, and closer relationships between the studio's top executives. If we're heading towards a giant landmine, like there's another studio making exactly the same game, that's good information, said Jason Connell, art director at Ghost of Yote, Sucker Punch, the studio. The comment rings especially poignant in light of Concord's failure, which analysts say occurred for a number of reasons, including an oversaturation of multiplayer live service shooters. Hull suggests in the interview that PlayStation isn't as intent on churning out live service games as it used to be. That said, PlayStation does have Bungie's Marathon coming up before March 2026, a game that has a number of Bungie fans concerned amid delays, staff layoffs, and a general lack of information as to what the game entails. AMC, our resident business analyst, our resident financial guru, how do you feel about these revelations and this change in direction from PlayStation CEO Herman Hulse and Sony?
I mean, it's overall, I would say, so when it's there's oversight, yeah, when there's oversight, there's always that worry that the people who don't know much about games start stepping in and giving notes when they shouldn't be giving notes. You see, it's like with TV, it's like writers, they'll like go through all this hard work to like put together a show, and then all of a sudden the producers would just give them a bunch of notes, and they're like, you're not writers, like why are you telling us like how to like how to write this show if it's successful, yada yada yada. But it's almost like you want, and so there's the worry that like basically managers are going to manage to justify their jobs as opposed to make sure that things are running smoothly. But in this situation, when you do have a well-publicized failure and a very expensive failure as Concord, I totally get the reaction. I do think sometimes it's like a little blown out of proportion in that other, like, I don't know, a lot of publishers have had a game fail, and then it's like, all right, let's kind of get our shit together. But like with this one, it's like, it's the worst mistake. Yeah. Sony's, they're like, they are the worst publisher now. They don't know what they're doing. They're like a chicken with his head cut off running around. And
well, there was a lot of attached to this game. It's like in a similar way as Starfield was elevated to unreal proportions by people who just attach all things ABK to it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so yeah, like there was like a part of it was like, it's like it was one game that it did fail horribly, but it's not like Sony had a string of failures or a string of mediocre games before that. And yeah. So yeah, it just wasn't a good sign for this live service thing. And there was also this idea that Sony was only making live service games and they weren't making any single player games, which we knew the single player games were still going to come. Like we knew Yote was going to come. We know Wolverine will eventually come and there'll be other games coming down the line. Astrobot also hit, I believe, mm-hmm. after Concord. If you look at the bigger picture, they still have other games outside of the live service thing, but people really wanted to just kind of bury this push for live service because there's this idea that live service games are bad, even though everybody plays them and everybody loves them and they make a ton of money. And there's a reason why any company would want to have a successful live service game in their catalog. Like look at Helldivers. Like it's 500,000 people are playing Helldivers and everybody's applauding it. They're not saying like, oh, what is this live service trash that people are playing? Like, and so when it does hit, it hits in a way that can't be replicated. Like Overwatch on its own, if I were to play single player Overwatch, I would enjoy it. But having a bunch of homies that I can hop on, like shoot the shit with, while catching up with people that I don't see on the regular, and also having a great gameplay experience that can't be replicated in a single player experience. And we're in this for varied experiences, not one type of experience when it comes to gaming. And so I totally appreciate the multiplayer thing, just like how I love the Stardew multiplayer. And so I do think it gets blown out of proportion at times with this whole live service thing. But let's get outside of that. I do think that it is imperative, like how we saw with Bungie with the whole plagiarism thing, and then just Marathon and how it was received, and then the reaction with like Sony saying that they're going to start bringing them more into the PlayStation 5 Studios banner and not letting them operate autonomously. It makes sense. We saw this with Redfall. When Redfall had its major failure, everybody pointed the finger at Microsoft. Microsoft mm-hmm. had nothing to do with Redfall because they acquired Bethesda when the game was already in development. And so the only thing you could say is, where was the oversight from Microsoft as they acquired this and allowed this game to go to the streets? But that was a wake-up call for Microsoft to be like, you know what? We need to make sure that we're more on top of this. And it was kind of like Matt Booty who's now going to be taking a lot of the blame if there's any just major failures at that level of Redfall. But as I said, we've had Redfalls, we've had Concords, like it does happen. Like occasionally a dud slips through the cracks and gets to the market. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how this oversight shows up with Marathon, because if that game shows up and hits, then we're like, okay, oversight good. If it shows up and still fails, I think people are just going to be like, what the hell is happening with Sony? And so, and really it's kind of more of a Bungie thing, but Sony's going to take the blame for it, even if they still have a game of the year, like Astrobot that comes out last year. It is what it is. I don't mind it because I feel like it's necessary when you have something that's a catastrophic failure that is Concord. You can't deny that it was a major failure and you want to learn from your mistakes. And so, yeah, I don't have an issue there. How about yourself, Adeb? What do you think about Sony, I guess, tightening the belt a little bit when it comes to their studios?
It just kind of makes me wonder why this wasn't the approach in the first place, because it's not like they just entered the industry. It's not like they didn't have the biggest, most shining example of a successful live service environment with Bungie doing Destiny. Like, it's all the answers, all the resources, all the insight was already there. Like, isn't that why they were acquired in the first place? And we're here after Concord just nosedives, and we're learning lessons that we already paid for. Like, you did, like, it wasn't a $250 million lesson. It was a $3.25 billion lesson. It's just now learning it. I don't know. So, whatever. Sometimes people just got to make mistakes. And as long as something is learned, as long as there is a pivot, then we got some forward momentum. We're still going. I mean, we come back to how you pointed out when people were like, oh, they're only doing live service. Like, they put out a graphic showing the investment they would be making in their various types of development for the years to come. And with the live service thing, yes, there was a huge chunk of it that was live service, but there was a slightly larger portion for single player games that was bigger than what they had invested in years prior. And it was like, okay, so they're doing this in addition, not instead. And that's why I was always cool on it. Like, hey, you gotta try these things. I wish they were a little more, I wish they had a bit more conviction when it came to the things that they were doing. Like, there was no need to start up 12. You could have started up six and really focused on them, focus tested them, really showed them to all the other studios, let people have input and ideas, and you could have come up with like two or three that were viable. Maybe one of them hits in the way that a Helldivers does. But Monday morning quarterbacking, armchair analyzing. So, all we can
And
do
it's,
is.
and it's, I guess it's like, it's the lessons of like hubris when you've had as much success as Sony. I'm sure there's a part of them that's like, yeah, just let the creators create. And that's always kind of the thought is, we really believe in our studios, so they should be able to do it. But as we saw, a lot of them weren't equipped to do it. And also, it's really hard to make a live service game. So yeah, I totally like I get your point. And it's as I said, I think it's because they had so much success that they were just like, yeah, we could do this. Like, put Naughty Dog on it. And then Naughty Dog's like, yeah, we're gonna need like all of our studios and everybody to focus on this one thing, and we will never be able to do anything else other than this if we want to put out a successful live service game. And we're seeing that with Battlefield, where it's you can't half-ass it. Like, you gotta throw all the studios at Vince Zampella and say, hey, crank out a good live service like war experience. I saw like some article where it's like, I think like Criterion or some studio that worked on Need for Speed, and it's like, say goodbye for Need for Speed, because this major studio that normally works on Need for Speed game is also now working on Battlefield. And it creates those
Damn.
types of it, yeah it
They circled the wagons on it, huh?
Yeah, and
Jeez.
also they threw it into one game as opposed to 11, like a bunch of studios working on 11. They had a bunch of studios working on one thing, and maybe that's what is needed for live service games. I am interested to see how many people at Arrowhead it takes to work on Helldivers 2, because they seem to have like figured that shit out. And I don't know how big Arrowhead is, but yeah, it's
On an unsupported engine.
yeah. So yeah, it's pretty nuts, but as you said, Monday morning quarterbacking, all I could say is when you have that type of success, you think, oh, we put our creatives to the task, and they'll always churn out like hits, and they learn that that is not the case. So yeah.
I mean, I'll get to that point a little later. We got some people trying to barge in. They're trying to rush the stage. They got things to say. They got validation to swing around like a sash on a victory lap. We got troll of the
Of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of
week,
the week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the week,
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 week, week,
week,
week,
week.
week, week. First troll says Holst was already demoted. He's one more mistake away from being shown the door. I get the sense Hiroki don't play games. Next troll says this clown should have been fired. They've had back-to-back morons running PlayStation. The pure incompetence is staggering. This generation has been the absolute worst. A handful of new games and a lot of remasters while these turds waste their studio time and talent chasing live service games. I don't know about this being the absolute worst. In fact, I'm hedging. I'm putting everything, my reputation, everything on the line in reinforcing my bet that by the end of next year, people won't be saying things like this anymore. It'll be, oh, this is the greatest generation ever. Couldn't have this on last gen. It's unbelievable, but we'll let time tell the tale. Next troll says, Marathon looks like ass, so maybe they aren't doing as much testing as they claim. Next troll says, oh, sweet. So we will only see the same like five games in rotation. Here's to more God of War, The Last of Us, Spider-Man, Horizon, and Ghost of Fill in the Blank. I mean, I wouldn't be upset about that one bit. God of War 3, The Last of Us 3, Spider-Man 3, Horizon 3, the third Ghost. Like, damn. If that doesn't happen, I'll be upset. I'm sure God of War is probably done after the two. But I know those other ones are coming. Next troll says, it was Halsey greenlit Concord, so that doesn't give me much optimism. And lastly, is Sony also going to test their drifting controllers? Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, trolls kind of have a point, man. These were decisions, these were losses that were made under his watch. Like, he already caught the demotion. Quote unquote, what is it? Air quotes, demotion.
Well, so was it him or so this wasn't Jim Ryan that like got this going? This is completely on holes at this point.
So, a random and unverified thing I read from somebody who was posting in a discussion alluded to how it was possibly Hulse push for live service while Ryan wanted to stay single player and keep that as the bread and butter. Don't know. I'll verify it. I probably shouldn't even say it because that's kind of tacky. That's
Interesting,
just
yeah, because
what
everybody
I
was.
saw while browsing around because I don't know the most about the situation.
Yeah, because everybody was blaming Jim Ryan for it, like saying like that's why he quote unquote stepped down and and everybody say he's actually fired and all that stuff. Interesting. Okay. But yeah, keep going.
There's a lot going on there, and there's a lot of threads that you could tug on. Watch whatever unveil. But yeah, man, they learned the lesson, hopefully. So we'll see what the upcoming titles, we'll see what the upcoming direction. We already have Sorrows in development over at Housemarque. We got Ghost of Yote about to come out. We got Wolverine in development over at Insomniac. We got Intergalactic in development over at Naughty Dog. So there's still a pipeline of Sony first party games. They said they're going to commit themselves to one or two first party releases each year. I think that's more than enough considering how much volume and quality is coming out of the third party in the indie spaces. So, hey, we went through a storm. And the thing about the whole live service push, which I kept trying to remind people of, and I thought was most important, was that it was only going to span like a 1 or 2 year period. It wasn't as if those 12 live service games were going to be, this ongoing string of development over a number of years. It was like, we're doing this now, and then it's over. And, for better or worse, it's over now. So we made it through the storm. We're back on course. We're still getting great stuff. I'm appreciative, AMC. You got anything for these trolls?
Yeah, no, I mean, one final thing on the topic, like kind of the need for leadership, like stepping in, is that, people like they look at Concord and they're like, I remember the comment at the time was like, toxic positivity is why it
Yes.
failed. But here's the thing with that is that when we saw Microsoft cancel all those games, we also heard all those developers saying, we were working on the best game ever. Like, if we had just continued the funding, you'd have seen like one of the greatest games of all time. And so I think everybody who's working on a project is too close to it and they believe they are working on something great. So that's something to also keep in mind. Like, when you hear people reacting really negatively when a publisher pulls a game, and they believe like, no, this game was going to be a surefire hit. Like, it's, you never know. You never know until it hits the market. And so maybe that was also a part of it, was like, well, we won't know until this game gets into people's hands. And then it got into people's hands and with the beta, and they're like, this is not going well right now. But yeah, like, but overall, yeah, like, it's, whoever's working on something is going to believe that that thing is the greatest thing ever, because they're putting all their time and energy into making it something great. And that's where you then need an outside perspective to maybe look at it and be like, hey, you're too close to this, and maybe you need to step away, but these things need to change because it's just not going right. And that was supposed to be Bungie, but clearly they're not the ones to, I guess, advise on all these things solely. And so now they're going to set up all these internal teams to, I guess, keep track of these things and to check a game's progression of development. So yeah, I seeing all that, it all kind of makes sense to me as to why it happened and to why they need to make these changes to their development process.
Yes.
That's all I got there. A-Dub, do you have any quick hits before we get out of here?
Troll of the week.
Week,
Troll of
troll
the
of the
week.
week.
Troll of the week. Troll of the week. Week,
Week, week,
week.
week, week.
Week, week, week. Let me see. Do I have any? Did I mention that? I think we talked about that a little bit. No Man's Sky. Yet another update. Voyagers. This update is actually a good bit more substantial than it seems. On the surface, it's introducing Corvette class ships, multiplayer crew, and tech that will be shared with the Corvette class ships. You're building piece by piece your very own like ship with habitats that you can get up and walk around in. What is it? Explore the stars with and navigate just like you would any other ship in No Man's Sky, but it has that next level of being its own like enclosed environment as well. You load in and pop out the back, a la Starfield, if you know how they put their ships together. And this is out now. It's yet another free update. I believe this brings the game up to version 6.0. And there's a lot going on in this patch. I'll just give you a bullet point list from Weston you pull over at IGN. You get in the Corvette ship class. You're going to be able to assemble these ships and find modules all over the universe that you can implement into your design. You're going to have the multiplayer crew. You're going to have a mission radar, autopilot in space, spacewalking, new missions, starship interiors, new spacesuit, skydiving, which to me looked like it just transforms this into a whole nother game. Graphical improvements, which is a massive understatement of what they've done to improve the visuals even further. Varied cockpits and a new expedition, which might be the first one A-Dub gets down in, because I'm definitely going to get me a piece of this Voyagers update. Let me see, where were some of the, let me scroll down a little bit here because I wanted to go to some of the visual updates. Like the big thing, first and foremost, is that they have PSSR support now. So the game's going to look sharper. It's probably going to run smoother. I'm looking forward to seeing what that's going to be doing. They improve the visual stability of heavy air effects and resolve flicker issues. People complain about that a great deal, so it's nice whenever a developer rectifies flickering of any kind in their game. They improve the appearance of cloud shadows, making them denser and more dramatic. They added localized hero lighting for the player character, improving their appearance in darker environments. They improved the rendering and lighting of 3D objects such as the player ship, the multi-tool, the jetpack, and on the inventory screen. They improved the appearance of glowing distant objects, and there's just so much more on top of bug fixes and other quality of life additions that Hello Games typically includes with their major releases. AMC, I know you have No Man's Sky. I know that you've gotten the taste of it from time to time. Is the Voyagers update the one that's gonna bring you back this time around?
I mean, it looked tempting. It won't bring me back like as of right now, but as I look at it, much like Stardew Valley, as I was talking about earlier, there's just so much content, and you don't have to hop in and buy a ton of DLC to get caught up or to get everything available to you. So it's just one of those things that I know my last experience of it, and there is the curiosity of hopping in and just seeing just a completely new game. It's 6.0 for damn sake. So a completely six times a different game from what I experienced. And so, yeah, there is that curiosity of just seeing that in person. But outside of that, no, nothing, not really. There's too much going on right now, Adub.
Well, I'm firing it up. I'm getting a taste today because I gotta see what's going on. I gotta see what it takes to do these expeditions. I gotta make my Corvette class ship. AMC, I got ideas, and I've seen so many things that people have already made. Like one person just made a big Homer Simpson face. It's a flat one, 2D, and it's pixelated. It looks awesome. Another person made Boba Fett's ship, the Slave One, is we don't call it anymore. Somebody made a giant Borg cube. It looks awesome in motion. So, you know, it seems to be a lot of flexibility, a lot of variety, especially if you want to make just regular or somewhat out there type of Corvette class ships. You can be as conservative or as expressive as you want. And I'm looking forward to see what I can come with. Ideally, I want to try to maybe make a ship like what's in Starfield. I like some of the designs that were in there. I like the overall aesthetic. Maybe I'll make the Trailblazer from Star Wars Outlaws. Who knows? Maybe I'll make the Swordfish from Cowboy Bebop or something, or make the Bebop. Or maybe even I'll make the Kestrel from FTL. That might be my goal ship. But who knows? I'm excited. I appreciate everything the Hello Games and Sean Murray do. I'm looking forward to the next one because they're certainly going to add or improve something that I'm looking forward to. But AMC, you got any quick hits?
Nah, I am done. This is Control Issues. I am AMC. AMC,
how you doing? We are Control Issues. Thanks for playing. Sucker.